You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
Oh, my God, it's really not early. 9:09 on the West Coast, which means it's 11:09 where P. Kimball Holmes is joining me. Kim, happy Friday. How are you?
Fabulous.
Really? Why?
Yes. Well, I look outside. There's a breeze blowing about 30 miles per hour. the sun's beating down on my bald head at about 90 degrees.
Ooh.
It's going to be glorious.
Really?
And I'm going to get out there and put a little olive oil on my head and bronze to a golden luster. I mean, based to a golden luster.
Sounds like a plan. Why? 30 mile an hour winds, though. Come on, man.
It's coming from your way, the south.
Really? All right. Sorry about that.
So it's pretty nice weather.
Sorry about
it's
that.
It's fine. It's okay.
All
right. That's all right.
All right.
I don't care. See, anybody, anywhere else, people see 30 mile per hour wind, and they go, oh, geez, oh, my God, you better tie everything down. Around here, they go, yeah, let's go bike riding.
I don't know. Bike riding in the wind sucks, man. I can tell you that. But I'm with you. No,
you know what I'm saying.
No, yeah. The weather in the plains, man. That's no joke. That's no joke. So,
no.
Now we've seen it with the flooding in Illinois and the flooding in Arkansas. And,
that's tragic. Jeez.
Yeah, I was reading. I was watching a news report yesterday where a guy in Alton, Illinois. Said that his driveway, he hasn't seen his driveway since like March 16th.
No way.
Yeah, and that they've been above flood stage. Now, above flood stage doesn't mean a whole lot until you get beyond the banks of the river. So, you know, you can define like the river, you know, exists at 50 feet. Okay, and then they'll say, okay, at 60 feet is flood stage, right? But the levee isn't overrun until 80 feet, something like that. I mean, that's how this stuff works. And so they've been, you know, those things have been out of the banks for a long time, which puts the levees in jeopardy, right? Because as the levees saturate with water, that's how they give way. And they're designed to take a lot of water, but not for extended periods of time. And then when that happens, so the Midwest, man, they that's some serious shit there. And that, I mean, a ton of water, too, all over the region. So anyway, I wanted to ask you right at the top of the show.
Yes, sir.
75th anniversary of D-Day. You had to watch some of that stuff. Your father flew a C-47. Now, my understanding is that he towed gliders
as well, yes.
So do you know who he flew? Do you know who he flew the night of D-Day?
Who he flew? I don't know.
Okay, you know what? We need to.
He started out.
Okay, hold on, hold on.
Here's what I want. He did several round trips.
Okay, so we need to find out what unit he was with. And then we'll find.
Okay.
If you can do that, we'll find out who they supported that night, and we can find out.
Oh, cool. Yes.
Where your dad flew.
I will.
where your dad flew.
I will do that.
Yeah, what mission that squadron had and who they supported. And so what were your thoughts watching it yesterday?
Kind of proud, but emotional. Yeah. It 75 years ago is a long time, and I just thought, my God, and to see those vets that did make it back to the service in France, I thought, I don't know how half of those guys got in their pants because their cojones were so big. And it was such a monumental effort. The fact that they just kept coming and coming and coming. And they did it. They did it, you know. 9,000 U.S. soldiers lost their lives, and I don't know how many thousand of the French and English, and you know, it was pretty pretty incredible. And then that last night, I was watching the hockey game, and before the hockey game, I switched over to watch the Longest Day with John Wayne about the invasion.
Right.
And, you know, it was, pretty interesting, but,
hello.
And then Saving Private Ryan was on last night. It's pretty heavy. And then, for my dad to come home and, die in a car accident, pretty,
lame, right?
Pretty lame.
Yeah, to survive all that and then come home.
I know he did several trips, you know, drop the glider, unhook the glider, drop the troopers, go back to England, load up, hook up to another glider and do it again. And until his plane got shot up and he couldn't. He just barely made it back the last time.
Yeah, well, do you have his military record or do you have anything?
I have a bunch of papers, and I will take a picture of them and send it to you.
Yeah, if you could take a few pictures and send them, I'll run down the unit history, and we'll find out where he went and what he did, which would be pretty cool.
You know what I do have, Mac? You're going to laugh your ass off. Is he had, I have in my possession about 6 different drinking clubs for officers. And Paul Mills Holmes, you know, allow one guest and, or, you know, stuff like that. And they were all in England. And there was one in Texas when he was, when the war ended, he was training in Texas to, invade Japan. And,
have a car down there. Where was he born and raised? Where was your dad born and raised?
My dad was born and raised in, Ohio or Indiana. And he grew up in, his father, was a doctor. And, my grandmother was, in dance, the one who became the, cookbook author and Ladies Home Journal lady, my, patron saint, one of them. And, she was born in Ohio, went to Ohio State for dance.
Love that.
And,
go Buckeyes.
Go Buckeyes.
So he came home. What did he do when he came home?
He worked in Fairchild aircraft that made the the flying boxcars, they were called. It was the next generation you know, where they dropped, you know, Jeeps and stuff like that. It was a bigger version of a C-47, and it was manufactured in Hagerstown, Maryland. And he worked there as a draftsman, and then he test flew those airplanes, and before he died, yeah.
Wow. Well, the no, I think that'd be cool if you could take a couple pictures of whatever papers you have. Then we'll run that down. But the no, you know, the other,
I'd love to know that.
Yeah, I was talking about in the first hour. I know sometimes you listen, sometimes you don't. But you know, I mean, to me, I got to thinking yesterday about, you know, what an expensive price to pay that day, to, you know, to go back to Europe.
Oh.
And then I thought, and then I was talking with a couple of friends, and I thought, you know, World War II was a really, you know, expensive price to pay. And I looked up the number of people. How many people do you think died as a result of World War II?
Oh, 500,000 would be my guess.
Well, no, I'm talking about total civilians, military, you know, in the whole conflict.
I can't imagine. I have no idea.
Between 70 and 85 million people died as a result.
Oh, my.
Of all causes, from disease to concentration camps to fighting to bombing and whatnot. And you know, and I.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and so
that's overwhelming,
isn't it? That
I'm just blown away.
So the free nations of the world that did not confront Germany, when Germany started acting stupid, right?
Yeah.
When they could have essentially gone back in there and done it on the cheap and said, no, it's not going to be like that. But you know what? Free nations, you know, tend not to like to do those things. And, you know, the lesson of World War II, the lesson of yesterday, of the price that God paid, was only a small part of the total.
Yes.
And the lesson is, if you're not willing to confront totalitarianism when it seeks to turn the world on its ear, you're only going to pay a much larger price down the road if you don't confront it.
Yes, you are. And I'm glad you said it, because that's exactly what we're looking at now.
And you right, you look at the Chinese, right? You look at North Korea, you look at Iran, and again, I've got one son in the reserves now, and the other one's on active duty, and I don't want to see the country go to war, but the inescapable conclusion is that the only way you sustain the peace is through strength. You have to have a strong military that somebody would look at and say, yeah, we don't really want to take that on. And then you have to do that in conjunction with your allies, and they can't disarm. And that's why we need Japan to retool its military. We need Germany to retool its military, right? And we need all the other nations to maintain their military. So when we all stand together as free nations in this world and say, no, there's a rules-based order. It's called international law that we've all signed up for. And it's got to be.
We signed up 75 years ago with that, or 70 years ago with the with NATO, and you have to keep that strong, and you have to work together in unison. You can't just can't go off on your own. And now I saw last night where the Chinese leaders said Putin's his best friend. Oh, please give me a fucking break. You know, I mean, you see stuff like that, and what you just said is so true. Right. We have to stand together,
right.
and we have to do strength. We have to do diplomacy.
But at the end,
we have to communicate with our allies.
Right, but at the end of the day, right, you cannot back down from these son of a bitches. And so, if you simply replace
absolutely
the pictures of Hitler, Mussolini, right? Let's see. Tojo was the prime minister of Japan. And
yes, he was.
And so if you replace those pictures now with Putin, Xi from China, the guy from Iran, and North Korea,
yeah,
what's the difference, right? They're all
nothing.
All people, right, all dictators, all totalitarian states that are here to tell you, yeah, up isn't towards the sky anymore. Up is now that direction. And you look around like, no, I'm pretty sure up is that way. No, it's not. It's not. We're telling you that up is now towards the ground. Like, well,
yeah. Yep.
And then if you won't stand up and say, fuck you, man, it ain't that way. And if we have to fight, then we'll fight. But we cannot do it. And but again, when you won't do that, when the free nations of the world, and in particular, our allies, you know, Germany, they don't fund their own defense. You know, France, they've allowed theirs. I mean, what you do is you allow them to believe that, you know what, we can roll these bitches. We're not afraid of them. And they need to be afraid of our combined strength. And so, to me, that's been in my head the last couple of days. So, I know your dad.
Well, it's well said. Well said.
Well, anyway.
And I agree with you 100%, Mac.
And Kim's not the most butch. And I'm not... And again, you know, where this to me was really interesting, I started listening to some lectures about General Marshall, right?
Yes.
I mean, you talk about one of the most incredible Americans in the 20th century, George Marshall, right? He rebuilds the army for World War I. He rebuilds it again for World War II, and he rebuilds
a
third time for Korea. After we stood down, and his thing was, look, unless you want to continue to fight these kind of wars, you have to have an army that promotes deterrence. We have to do that. And that saves lives. It saves money, right? It saves the carnage
of
doing this. And so anybody who would look at you would say, no, I'm not going to take that on. And so he's really an unbelievable American. And so I have this stuff booming in my head, and I see that bullshit. Like, first of all, China and Russia don't like each other. They're faking it. Why are they faking it? Because they want the Western world to say, yeah, we really do need to allow these guys to do whatever they want. And we really shouldn't screw with them. So whatever China says, let's sign up for it.
We don't.
Well, but again, who wants to be, you know, all butch and doing that shit? Nobody. Nobody wants to go to war. But think about this. If the Allies had said, Germany, we're telling you, right, that we will sit down and we will renegotiate some of the terms of the Treaty of Versailles if they're causing you this kind of economic hardship. But we are putting on boats divisions of soldiers from the United States, from England, and France, not going to need a boat. They'll go by train. We're going to get off our train and we're coming to Germany. And we will impose our will on you.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? Maybe World War II doesn't happen.
That's right.
And maybe 70 to 85 million people don't die.
That number just freaked me out.
Yeah.
I'm just floored.
Mind blowing.
Yeah. Absolutely it is.
Right. And so if they would have had the will, you know, might that have never happened? You know, without Germany marching all over Europe, might Japan have never entered into the tripartite agreement with Italy and Germany because they would have been alone and Japan would have said, you know, we need to find another way because it ain't going to work out. Because we don't have any, so anyway, so I don't know. Peace through strength, man. Peace through strength. All right,
that's it.
So, what's the coolest thing you've grilled in the last week?
Oh, flank steak.
You did?
Yeah.
Talk to me about flank steak. Flank steak's a little bit rougher cut, yes?
Yes, it is, and it's a great piece of meat to marinate all day or overnight. olive oil, lemon juice, garlic, whatever herbs you want. Then you have your grill real hot. And certain meats, you cook at high heat, under direct heat, excuse me. Other heats, you have to do brown them, get your grill marks, and then put them on indirect heat for an hour or two. Depends what you're cooking.
So how do you cook flank steak?
Well, I throw it smoking hot on the grill, get my grill marks,
right?
And then take it off, let it rest, and then the key to that is cutting across the grain. Now, the flank steak is a long strip of meat, and it's kind of thin.
Right.
It's not real thick.
Right.
And when you bring it home or have your butcher kind of trim it up a little bit, but you want the fat because that goes through the meat and helps tenderizes it. But you'll see a look down at the table,
right,
and you say you've got a piece about 12 inches long.
Got it.
And it's maybe about 4 inches wide.
Got it.
And the grain runs from right to left as you're looking down on it.
All right.
You can see the grain. And the key is to cut across the grain on a bias. You know, like a 45-degree angle, you cut it, and you cut strips. And you'll find that way it's going to be tender. It's going to have some chew to it because it isn't a filet mignon or a ribeye. But it's going to have great flavor, and it's going to be tender. But that's how you have to cut it. If you cut it with the grain instead of across the grain, you'll be chewing one piece for about 20-30 minutes, and then you might choke.
Really?
On it.
That's it? That much?
No. You have to cut across the grain, which makes the pieces smaller and edible.
Hmm.
I would think it's
all going the same place, so it wouldn't matter. But is that me being stupid?
No, it's just that particular cut of meat. A ribeye, it doesn't matter which way you cut it. It's going to be good. Same with a filet. That's just the way they are. But it's a cheap cut of meat, too.
Because that's how my mother, that's how my mother cut it.
Just
that kind of slanted cut.
Very good.
But I just thought that was my mom, like, getting her foodie on. I didn't realize that there was a functional. I will tell you, flank steak is one of, marinated flank steak is one of the, favorite meals in our house. And my mom, it's my mom's recipe and,
great flavor too, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's as you said, it's a great grilling. It's a great grilling meal, but it is one of the favorites because of the marinade in our family for sure.
Yes. Now another thing, folks.
Hey, let me ask you about the meat like flank steak, do you pound it with a mallet?
That breaks the tissue down.
Do you do anything to tenderize it?
You have two sides to a pounder, to a tenderizer. a mallet is the word. You have a ripple side,
yeah,
and you have a flat side.
Yeah.
A flat side is for more delicate pieces of chicken or meat if you're pounding it, but the ripple side is for beating the shit out of it and breaking down the tissues. And that's the side you want to use on a flank steak or
the ripple side.
The ripple side, yes.
Will it maul the piece of meat using that little that
well, that I mean, you don't hit it like you were using a sledgehammer. You hit it and there's a motion you use. You hit it, and as you hit it, you kind of flick it. You move it to the right or left, depending on whether you're right or left-handed, and it just helps break the tissue down. You hit it, you don't raise it above your head, you know, you raise it about shoulder high and then bring it down and then kind of go to the right with it just as you're hitting it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like an arc going back and forth, not like, so if you get meat,
yes,
if you get meat shrapnel flying around the kitchen, you're probably hitting it too hard.
Absolutely, Mac. Absolutely, way too hard.
Right.
Absolutely too hard. You can't beat the heck out of it.
So you need to go see a therapist, dial down your anger, and then
or listen to your radio show.
There you go. Yeah,
one of those three things.
Do your breathing.
But also I wanted to say, if you have your own recipe to make a teriyaki marinade, or if you like Kikkoman, that's the one I started out with, Kikkoman teriyaki. And now they have a gazillion different flavors of it. But just a basic teriyaki, and you can use crushed garlic in there and throw things like that. And you put it in a Ziploc bag, your steak. And then you pour a cup of this marinade in there, and any other things like garlic or whatever herbs that you want to use. And then you seal that, and then you put it in a tray that has sides on it, a little sheet pan.
Can I give you my give you my mom's
yes, marinade? Yes, a cookie sheet. Yeah,
my mom's marinade for flank steak, right?
Yeah,
is a third of a cup of peanut oil, a third of a cup of soy sauce,
I love that,
a half a tablespoon of garlic. I'm sorry, a half a teaspoon of garlic, 1 tablespoon of A1 sauce, and a dash of Worcestershire sauce, and then a dash of brown sugar.
Oh, deluxe.
Hit with a mallet. Blend.
What time is dinner?
Blend in the blender, marinate overnight, or at a minimum 2 to 3 hours. So there's peanut oil, a third of a cup of soy sauce. And let me just tell you, this is delicious. I told you, Kathleen's stuff, it's easy to make, and it's out of the park. I mean, so none of this stuff is, you got to go, you know, to your local Japanese grocer and find this. These are things already in your cupboard. Peanut oil, soy sauce, garlic, A1 sauce, Worcestershire sauce, and some brown sugar. Hit it with a tenderizer.
Bingo, you're in the front row.
Tenderize the meat with your mallet. Put all that crap together in a blender. Blend it up. Dump it in a bag. Initially, before they had sealed bags, Kathleen used to put it in a Pyrex pan and put cellophane over the top. And that's how she would marinate her meat. But now you don't have to do that anymore. But there you have it. There you have it. Kathleen.
That's just special. Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, it's easy. Again, you know, her recipes, a buddy of mine, F-18 man, he makes my mom's pork chops now. You and I were talking about it. He added a little bit of fresh onion and fresh mushrooms to it, and he's like, Mac, the gravy's killer. It's easy to make. But that's now that I cook on a more regular basis, being divorced, the beauty of my mom's recipes is that they're easy. But the best part of them
yes.
is they're killer on the taste bud. So, anyway.
And that's what you strive for, no matter what you're doing.
But I don't know if the smoke from the Parliament cigarette added to the flavor when I was a kid. I don't know. Maybe it did. I still think it tastes good, though. But she...
And how much wine did she splash in that dish, too?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think she mixed. She was sucking in the wine from the Ernest and Julio Gallo Vin Rosé twist top bottles.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know that song.
Yeah. The pot belly bottle. Didn't everybody's mom do that? Evidently not.
My mom was a martini mom.
She was my mom, she would drink martinis. She was big on. She didn't drink the dark liquors very often. So wine and martinis with olives. She liked an olive with her martini too.
Yes. That's what my mother said to me when I was becoming of age. Don't drink dark liquor. Stick with gin and vodka. Clear liquors.
Why?
And don't,
any reason?
Don't. Well, just the additives to the dark liquors, I guess. I don't know. It could have been a wives' tale back in the 50s, for God's
who knows,
sakes.
No, they gave you those advice like it was like, hey, like this is like real advice, even though it was like.
Yeah. It was, just to keep you away from drinking.
Well, and then your grandmother would tell you, right? She'd be she'd be stirring her martini with her finger, and she'd be saying, "Stay away from those dark liquors." Okay, Grandma.
Pretty much the rule.
Do you want another martini? Yes, and I'd like two olives this time. Okay. Right?
Oh,
it was
God.
Like that
yeah.
was that right?
100%.
Back
God,
in the
damn, just sounds just like my grandparents and my mom.
and they do this, so they'd be sitting in their chair, and you'd be helping out because children were supposed to be seen but not heard at parties, unlike today. And so you'd go find your grandmother or your aunt or whoever you were getting their drink request, and they would be sitting there, and there's just these lovely ladies, but they'd like to have a drink or four. And they'd say, yes, Michael, and, stir their drink with their finger and lick it and say, dear, could you get me another one? And not too heavy on the gin, and two olives, and here, let me give you a kiss. And they grab your face, right? And they give you a kiss. You're sweet.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Right?
Get away.
You're such a sweet boy.
Come here, honey.
You'd go, and you'd go get him a drink, and you'd come back with the two olives, and they'd be so happy. Thank you, dear. No problem, Grandma.
Jeez.
They were nice, tough old ladies, too.
Boy, they were. Now my grandparents... they rolled in social circles in New York.
Oh.
And both of them had cigarette holders. Yeah. I got a picture. I got to find it. And I'll take a picture of it and send it to you. And like he's standing on by the fireplace with this cigarette holder and a cigarette in it. And I laugh my ass off whenever I see him, like it made a damn bit of difference,
Right, but when you were a kid, right, that was just like, oh, yeah, that's
the way. Oh, that was cool.
That was the way they did it.
Yeah, that's the way they roll.
That was the way they did it. My grandmother on my mom's side, she was the nicest lady, Margaret Metzger Forden, and every picture I ever have of her, she is the most impeccably dressed woman you'll ever see in your life. So grew up in the Seattle area.
Uh-huh.
And Alaska back in the day.
Oh, that's butch.
Yeah, when Alaska was butch as hell.
Oh.
Came from a money that was a mining family and had a little money. And so Margaret shopped at Nordstrom's back, you know, when Nordstrom's was just like a Seattle store. The Nordstrom family started there. And my grandmother, you never see her looking anything but like a Nordstrom model from whenever you would ever see her. She was the nicest. Never got a driver's license her whole life. Always ironed the church linens and could not stand if somebody couldn't do that right. She's not, Margaret did not go for that any at all. And was a wonderful cook. In fact, my mom's recipes are obviously my grandmother's recipes. And the pie recipe that you love so much is my grandmother's recipe.
Oh, God bless.
Exactly. she could make an apple pie. She could make a boysenberry pie. My favorite as a kid was boysenberry pie.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. The filling was delicious. It was the best. And, my grandmother. She'd make those lattice work pies, those lattice top pies where you put the
strips. They aren't easy to do either.
Yeah, I've never tried it. What do you, it's just strips, right? How do you connect the strips?
You connect strips. You do over and under. Let's see. How do I can show you.
It looks complicated.
Strips. Though. Yeah. You got to lay your strips down, and then as you're going along across strips, you take one, and then you pick it up, and then you lay it down on top of it, and then you go under, and it's a lot of work, is all I'm going to say.
I never really thought about it.
But it's a lot of work.
I never really thought about
it. It's better to make a pie crust top and cut some holes in it to let the steam out so you don't blow up a boysenberry bomb in your oven.
My grandmother was, and her tables were impeccable, right? Candles and salt shakers and cloth napkins with some kind of silver engraved, I would call it a napkin holder, but it's not. What's that ring that goes?
Napkin ring.
Yeah. Oh
I know
God.
Exactly what you're talking about because my grandmother was the same way and she had these little, scooped little square dishes with a little miniature spoon with salt in it and then a miniature pepper shaker.
Ooh.
At every place setting, you had your own salt and pepper.
Really?
You didn't have to ask to pass the salt and pepper. Everybody had their own. Yeah, yeah. That's how Omi rolled. because when you sit down and you look at your table setting, you've got silverware going on your left side, starting from your soup spoon in, and then the forks start on the right side, and your salad fork, your appetizer fork, your whatever they're serving that night, but it's all orchestrated, when I sat down, she said, when you get a dish, you look at your hostess, see what fork she picks up first, and that's what you use, or a spoon if it's a soup. And you never eat until your hostess eats. You don't sit down at the table and start reaching for food. You just sit still with your hands in your lap. And you look at the hostess and let her start the show.
How funny. Here's an email. Hey, boys, my mom was born in 1925. She never drove! She finally got her license in 1984, but never drove. Wasn't that more common back in the day? Yeah, I think because, you know, our mom stayed home. You know, I mean, I remember the the woman across the street, Mary Lou Baker, she didn't drive. She had to wait. She had to wait for her husband to come home to go to the store. But you could live like that. I mean, we all went to neighborhood schools. Even my Catholic school was only a couple miles from my house. And as soon as I could, I rode my bike. And I don't want to be in my car with my mom and sisters any more than I had to, for God's sakes. And I mean, hell, it'd be raining. I'd get on my bike and ride to school. The but I mean, you could do that. I mean, that that's the way our lives were. You weren't. I mean,
yeah.
So anyway, I remember my grandmother.
We walked to school.
Right, my grandmother. Yeah. She had a metal. She didn't drive. She worked at the DMV and she didn't drive. Her husband passed away when my dad was 13. He passed away in 1945. And yeah, so she was a young widow, and they had five kids, and her brothers moved into the house with her and helped raise the kids, and but she worked at the DMV, and she was kind of a heavyset lady, and we would she had a wire basket with wheels. And we would take the wire basket and we would go shopping at Lucky's that was two blocks from the house. Right? And it was Lucky's.
That's cool.
Lucky's. When Lucky's was, I had like big green, they were green stores with green letters out front. We would go down there and we'd buy whatever. And we'd put the bags in and we'd walk home.
Yeah.
And then we'd have to carry the bags up the steps to the house because the first floor was like on the second story in Sacramento because Sacramento used to flood. So the basement of the house, was on the ground and that way it could flood and the first floor not be, impacted. And so we would go upstairs. She would buy fruit from Angelo, the fruit guy, and you'd hear Angelo, right? And he was playing some music and you'd hear it and she would grab her little, like her little coin purse and she would have some cash in it and she'd have coins in that thing. And we would go down and we'd be standing on the sidewalk and Angelo would stop and she'd go to the truck and all the, on the back of his flatbed truck, right?
Yeah.
He had all these wooden boxes that had fruit in them, and they were all angled so that you could, you know, see them. So there was kind of a V rack in the back of the flatbed, and these wooden crates of fruit, you know, were sitting back there, and he'd drive up and down, and that's how my grandmother got her fresh produce, was from Angelo the fruit guy.
Wow. That's... That's the way it should be today.
But she didn't need to drive, and she normally took the bus to work, I think, and then on Sunday somebody would drive to Mass, and that was my grandmother's world, but you know what? Now just the vision of her coin purse, right? Those beaded or those silken coin purses. That women
have.
And I mean that thing would be full of change too. There'd be a ton of change in that thing. If she hit somebody with that purse, she'd knock them straight out. And then there'd be there'd be dollar bills and shit in there. And she'd open that thing like it was Fort Knox. Let me look in here and see what I got. Okay, and she'd pull those dollar bills out. Here you go, Angelo. And he was and of course he's a fruit guy, so he's Italian, right?
Yeah.
So anyhow, good now, stuff.
Go ahead.
But you know, your grandmothers and stuff like that, It's incredible. I mean, because they were highfalutin people, you know, what your, you know, cigarette holders and editing.
Well, that was on my father's side. My mother's grandmother, her mother, she didn't drive either. And, she walked or, somebody drove her. But yeah, she, my other grandmother, my mom's mom, used to take me to the track. And there's a quarter horse track near, in Hagerstown, Maryland, about 4 blocks away from where my grandparents lived. They had a big three-story house and, you know, they had 4 kids and whatnot. But, we'd go for, go to the track, during the racing season and we'd walk. She wouldn't drive or take a cab. We'd walk. She had a box seat and she played the ponies every single day. And I loved it because at the racetrack, the people at racetracks, that are real race fanatics, are like people that go to fights. Very colorful people.
Right.
And is how I'll put it.
Right.
But yeah, but, she didn't, sit in the grandstands or along the rail. She had her own box and she'd go and a steward would come by and bring her a cocktail. Oh God. And she smoked her cigarettes just straight up.
She'd butch.
Yeah, she was. But, yeah, she died of, she had a heart attack when she was about, late, mid-50s.
Yeah. Yeah, we never could figure out why.
But. Yeah, drinking, she was a party animal. Oh my God. And she could pound it.
And they didn't tend to exercise back in those days.
Oh no. No, no, no. What's that? How do you spell that?
No. The people that exercise, they went to the gym and they put that strap, that like cloth strap.
Did that vibrate it? Oh, I remember those commercials. God. Yes. And do you remember when, well, when I was a kid, nobody lifted weights until George Atlas.
Right. Remember Jack?
Came on the scene.
Well, Jack LaLanne.
Jack LaLanne started the fitness craze.
Everybody thought he was a weirdo. Men played golf for exercise, right?
That's right. That's and you walked. There's no such thing as a golf court, cart.
Yeah, I don't think they were invented.
Back in my grandparents' days.
Yeah, you walked.
Man, you hoofed it. You carried your own bag, or you had a caddy.
Yeah, or you had a caddy. That's when caddies had a country club, man. The caddy shack. Yeah. That's how that whole thing. Because the rich guys, I'm not carrying my clubs. Come here, son. Yeah.
Here's a buck. Carry my clubs for 18 holes.
Yeah, but they didn't. That was life. That was life.
That was a lot of money back then for caddies.
Yeah.
And
here's an email. Did your parents drink every night like mine did? Yeah, mine did.
Mine did. Mine did. They sure did. And my mom was the June Cleaver. When Dad came home from the block plant, he'd have a martini. They'd both have a martini, but he was a beer drinker.
Oh, really?
He loved his beer.
What kind?
In Cincinnati, they had 3 breweries three German breweries in Cincinnati, Ohio. And he always had a case of beer on hand at all times. And then in the later year, when he had his shop in the garage, he had his own refrigerator. And you go by, in Ohio, the liquor store, and it's a drive-up window. And they come out and throw three cases of beer in his trunk, and he'd drive, pay and drive off. And then he'd get home, and I'd have to stock his refrigerator with beer.
No kidding. Cincinnati's a pretty German town, just so everybody.
Very, very, very German. Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to go to opening day at Crosley Field because Dad was a friend of Joe Nuxall, all the breweries were open for free beer and brats and things like that before the game on opening day. And so you go down and all the breweries are close to the ballpark within, you know, walking distance. And that's how they rolled. Pretty cool. I couldn't drink the beer when I was a kid, but I sure had my share of brats, I tell you.
Let me tell you, a knee-high
pop, you know, knee-high cream soda. I like cream soda. That was good. Oh man,
cream soda. I used to. I'm working in Cincinnati. I'm in college. My dad's managing the Reds. And so I go there to spend the summer, and I was tending bar on these riverboats and working.
Yeah.
And then one summer I did an internship for the Reds and tended bar and worked on a houseboat that went up and down the river to make some money. So anyway, but the people there, you know, are, you know, they're pretty conservative, right? Blue collar people.
Much so.
Right. So one night after we get done working, I go out with the guy who I work on the boat with, and one of his buddies show up, and we're sitting around talking, and he's talking about working. His summer job is at the Made Right factory, in Cincinnati. Now, Made Right is like, they make cold cuts, they make hot dogs, they make bologna, right?
Yeah.
So, it's not the slaughterhouse, but it's where you're making, it's pretty hardcore work, right? You're working in a factory. And
yeah.
So, he said, so these guys, you know, so he gets assigned to work on whatever, right? You know, sausage, whatever. And,
yeah.
So he's working with this crew. Now, these guys have worked together for years. And they all know each other. And so for lunch, they all go to one table, right? They pull out their black, right, lunch pails, right, with the curved top, right? And your thermos is stuffed into the top. Yeah. And then you've got your lunch. I mean, that's how men took their lunch to work. So he said, everybody's eating at the table, and they're talking about the Reds. And they're talking about Johnny Bench this and Joe Morgan that and Pete Rose this and David Concepcion that, right, and blah, 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 blah. And so he's like, he's sitting there and he says, I hear Johnny Bench is a fag. He says, with that.
No, he didn't.
He did. And with that, the whole discussion, he said, stopped. Okay. Now there's certain things that you did not talk about in public, right?
No.
And
no.
He said
No.
He said they looked at me as one and said, listen to me. Don't ever say anything like that again here. Do you understand me? Or you won't work here anymore. He said, okay, sorry.
Oh, jeez.
Right, but that was...
And he was
Yeah, he's just a college kid working there in the summer. But, you know, that was the way it wasn't like, oh, yeah, be yourself, however, whatever you feel. No, there was an order to life.
A big order.
And you want to swim upstream?
Serious order.
Yeah. Like, what a dumb, what a dumbass. What a dumbass. The, here's another email. I think back in our days, we learned about our family members, their background, ethnicities, habits, etc. I think we lost that unique ability to learn about such family history and have extensive knowledge of them. Well, I don't, you know, I don't know about that. I mean, because now you have Ancestry.com, you can learn about your family. But I just, you know, when, like, us laughing about this kind of nonsense, right? Like,
yeah.
Go get me another, you know, go get me another martini and easy on the gin and two olives this time. And then, you know, pat both your cheeks and give you a kiss. I mean, they were just wonderful old ladies, but they liked to drink.
Yes. Yes, they did. and they were serious about it too.
They like, yeah. And they drank, and they drank
and you
every
think of the life they led of, the effort they put in to keep the family going and clothed and fed and house clean and all that went into being a housewife back then.
Hell, they needed a drink.
You're damn right. Two.
And they did. Yeah, it's like they didn't drink like some nights, right?
No. And they didn't drink to get drunk. It was part of the routine.
They had pretty high tolerance, in my opinion.
I think they did.
Because they drank every night. Anyway. All right, what, you got big plans for the weekend?
I'm going to watch as much sports as I can. Did you watch the hockey game last night?
Oh, my God, it was awesome. Dude, this time of year when not a whole lot of craziness, but it's just the hardest, roughest, back and forth hockey.
Stanley Cup is brutal.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best.
They just beat up on each other nobody's business.
You have one of Boston's players playing, one of their defensemen, playing with a broken jaw. Things that you don't see in other sports, right? Playing with a broken jaw. What?
Yeah, and he just got the jaw got broken the game before, so he had one day off. They wired his jaw shut, and out they put him on the ice, and he played well. Yeah. Well enough, but not well enough.
Not well enough. The Bruins lost. So St. Louis Blues have never won the Stanley Cup in their history, and they go
back 3-1 now.
They go back to St. Louis with a chance to win it in front of their hometown folks, which will be, St. Louis will be absolutely hysterical, which is pretty cool. And I'm not much of an NBA guy.
I'd love to see him win.
I'm not much of an NBA guy, but Toronto's on the verge of making Golden State go away, which would be pretty
cool. They're up,
3-2.
3-1?
3-2.
3-1.
Who's Beth rooting for?
Oh, 3-2, yeah. She's rooting for the Raptors.
Oh, she's all Raptors all the time?
Yeah, all Raptors, all the time. I'm loving it. She's into it. They play tonight again, too.
Hey, what about, like, that part owner of the Warriors shoving?
What a pig.
Well, first of all, right, he cusses at him and he shoves him. Now, if that dude stops and turns, that dude's gonna get knocked out. Okay? Like what planet do you think you're from where you think you could do that?
Yeah. Arrogant, entitled owner, my ass.
Yeah. Idiot.
Clueless about sports.
Well, and you know the one
he's just a rich guy
who
gets courtside seats with his girlfriend who's half his age and sitting there and then having that kind of mouth. But boy, did they come down on him.
Yeah. It's just
the NBA
can't go to games for a year. But you know what? You know, he had his, like,
find half a million bucks. I'd have kicked him out of the franchise.
They did? They got fined half a million dollars?
Yes, he did.
Ooh. What about, I don't know, I just, and I'll tell you what, I mean, you got to give, what's that guy's name, Lowry, who he shoved? You got to give that guy, you know, he said, look, I can't defend myself. I can't do anything. If I say something, I'll get fined. If I punch him, right, I'll get kicked out of the league for the rest of my life. And he said, there's no place for that stuff because we can't do anything. Because let me tell you this, he sure as hell wouldn't do that to me out on the street.
Yeah, and Steph Curry commented on that after the game. He said Lowry showed a lot of class by walking away.
Yeah, especially when you're competing and your blood's up, and all of a sudden somebody does something stupid.
God.
And we're not talking about somebody going in the stands. We're talking about, you know, he dives for a ball. And then this idiot shoves him and cusses at him. Like, what?
Stupid.
Yeah. I'm not much of an NBA fan, but I saw that.
I know. But I'd only watch it in the playoffs and then the championship series. And but hockey I watch all the time when I can.
Yeah. No,
that to me is just – and then baseball, of course – we get a nice long baseball season.
And
it makes it
your Dodgers are all about it right now.
Yeah. Jesus, I saw last night on the TV that the Yanks have 11 players on injured reserve.
Yeah.
11 players, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's amazing. And they've got like the third.
But they're still in the lead.
They're still
ahead of Boston.
They've got the third best record in baseball. They've had these young guys that have played out of their minds, and it's been if you're a Yankee fan, not everybody is, but if you're a Yankee fan, it's been pretty fun to watch young guys come up and just do great. And so
I like it. Yeah. And the Twins are leading the majors in home runs, for God's sakes.
But first of all, the Twins will lose to the Yankees in the playoffs. It happens all the time.
Yep.
Every year.
Yep.
Right?
Every year.
And the Dodgers will get to the World Series and will not win.
No, because they have...
They're too smart. They're too smart to win.
Yeah, they Oh, right? He's pitching a no-hitter. He's only thrown 80 pitches.
No, yeah.
We got to take 100 pitches. We got to take him out.
Yeah, and it's his third time.
It's the sixth inning.
Third time.
Are you kidding?
Third time through the order. Got to take him out.
Yeah. I get so angry. I understand the Billy Ball stuff, but.
Come on, man.
I can't say that I'm a fan of it.
They've lost. They've given away. They haven't even lost. They've given away World Series that they were absolutely in and possibly could have won. They gave them away by the fact that they're just too smart for everybody. So, anyway. All right, sir. Well, look, thank you very much for the walk down memory lane and the lesson on flank steak, and have a great weekend.
Okay, and we're going for the grill next week.
No, that's
it's,
right. We got to talk about
grill. We're zeroing in on the 4th of July now, so we have to start talking about grill. And any questions that you all have out there, please jot them down and ask us next week, because we have the answers for you.
Maybe not we, but you certainly do. All right, sir. Have a good one.
Together, we don't miss much. Hey, I had a little exchange of text with Colleen, and I sent her a picture of the bag I'm doing for her, and she just went nuts. So... I'm going to start working on that. But first, I got to get your man bag ready.
Oh, my God. I told Colleen, like, it'll be done in 3 years, so don't get too excited too quick, okay?
I know. She's only a sophomore.
I know. You've got 3 years to get it done.
Well, it's going to be done before that because I want her sashaying around with that across my shoulder. I want my little.
Well, they're easy though. You could make her like a little black, you know, bag that they with that long strap that they throw over their shoulders. That's what they like. They don't nothing too big,
yeah.
Nothing too fancy.
I'm gonna call her this weekend, and I have to talk colors with her.
Got it.
Right. I know what your color is, but I have some nice deer skin. I want to ask her if she'd like to have a bag, you know, and I line all my bags for everybody.
Well,
so.
All right. There you have it.
You take care, my man.
All right, Kim. See you later.
Have a great weekend.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You bet. The one and only Pete Kimble Holmes. That'll do it. Don't touch that dial. This program continues next. In the first hour, you're going to hear my soliloquy, if you will, about watching the commemorations of D-Day and the responsibilities that free nations have to make sure that stuff like that doesn't happen again. But it doesn't seem to me like they've taken the lessons, the appropriate lessons, from that fight. And that is, you know, between 70 and 85 million people died during World War II of all causes. And if the free nations of the world would have been committed to the Treaty of Versailles, maybe that never happened. And so I coupled that kind of this week in history with listening to some stuff about General Marshall, who later becomes the Secretary of Defense, who later becomes Secretary of State, and his conclusions. After putting the United States Army together on three different occasions, that the only way to sustain peace and avoid war is to have an army, a standing military that was strong enough to deter anything that one of your adversaries might undertake. And so your military would be preemptive. So while it would cost you more on an annual basis, you would never be forced to empty the treasury and turn the nation upside down economically, because you would never fight another large war because nobody would undertake such a thing. So when you put those things together, the incredible cost of Normandy, and you swap out Hitler, Mussolini, Tojo, with Putin, Xi, Ayatollah Khomeini, see the guy in Iraq still, and Kim Jong-un. What's the difference? What's the difference? Dictators, totalitarian regimes that seek to turn the world order upside down. And the free nations of the world have to be willing to confront that. And I after watching, those guys in their 90s and thinking about the courage and the sacrifice and all the people who died that day and in that campaign, that's only a drop in the bucket. That's only a drop in the bucket, because we were not, as free nations, we did not stand up to a dictator who sought to overturn that which had legally been entered into by nations. And that was Germany, led by a national socialist government, and Adolf Hitler. And you've got to stand up to him. And there is no other way. So, have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday. Grant Newsham's going to join us, so we'll talk about Mr. Xi. We'll talk about destroyers colliding in the South China Sea. And we'll talk about those type of things. So have a great weekend. On a Friday, All Marine Radio, over and out.